Evening. I'd like to call this meeting of the Marion County Planning Commission to order for August 16th, 2022. We are here tonight to go over the amendments of the Marion County Urban and Rural Zone legislative amendments and changes and updates. We do not have a quorum tonight, so this meeting is being recorded, and we will have our members listen to those recordings later on so we can have a vote and either approve, change, or do what we are going to do. So with that, I'll turn it over to staff for their staff report, and then after that, we'll have public testimony.
All right, thank you. For the record, Brandon Reich, Marion County Planning Director. So there's a lot of amendments here. There's a couple hundred pages, and I won't go through every one of them. There is a copy. I think you have that copy from the table over there, and we can talk about any in detail. Basically, Marion County keeps its code up to date with changes that are made in state law. There have been recent changes that the county is required to adopt into its code, and in addition, staff's recommending the county consider amendments to be consistent with state law and then various clarifying amendments in the code. And tonight, staff's ask will be for the board or for the Planning Commission to consider a recommendation to the board. So the Planning Commission members who aren't here will have an opportunity to review the tape. And then once that's complete, we'll schedule a meeting that the Planning Commission can meet and make a decision to recommend to the board some or all of these changes. So I won't go through, like I said, all of them, but I want to highlight a few. There are a number of amendments that are in relation to legislation that's come out in 2019 and 2021 and 2022, as well as administrative rules that got adopted along with those. And this involves everything from dwellings to allowing a farm brewery for hops, and some different clarifying amendments that the state provided. There are a number of staff recommended amendments that, and I can answer any questions about any of them. I think some of the ones to highlight would be, for a long time, we've had the provision for a lot of record dwelling in the special ag zone. And the proposal here adds that same provision. So when there's a family, a property's been owned by a family since 85, and there's no other lots or other parcels nearby that they have a house on, that family is able to get one dwelling in that EFU zone on that property. And that's called a lot of record. It's been there since 85, and it qualifies for a home. There are also changes to the secondary farm dwelling so that on the EFU and SA farm timber zones so that they're consistent with state law. Currently, we have more requirements than state law does. For instance, the home has to be manufactured home, and this would change that. And so in some circumstances, the secondary home where someone is working on the farm can be site-built. And that provides farmers with the ability to put more investment into their property for a long-term farming and to be able to have someone working on the farm live in a house long-term because they built a stick-built house instead of being manufactured home. It also removes the requirement that a secondary farm dwelling for a family member be 80 acres. Secondary farm dwelling for a family member can be stick-built right now in law, the farm operation has to make $80,000 farm income, but it doesn't have to be on an 80-acre parcel. Sometimes farmers have their primary farm dwelling on a smaller parcel because it's not being farmed, and that's where that secondary farm dwelling for a family member goes. So it doesn't always have to go on the large farm parcel, like an 80-acre parcel, because that might be what's being farmed. So this matches what's in state law. It adds provisions for the division of state of historic dwellings for being able to divide off land that contains historic dwellings, and it adds provisions for what the requirements are when historic dwellings are going to be remodeled or removed, proposed to be removed. Clarifies the standards that would apply when there's a second kitchen in a home. And the Planning Commission considered permitting extended occupancy of a recreational vehicle on land with a dwelling. But that's not being recommended by staff tonight. We've discussed that, because there are options for applying for a hardship dwelling within a zone. and where there's already a dwelling on the property, a financial hardship, a medical hardship, could have a financial component to it, where you could have a hardship dwelling on a property. Aside from that, there are a number of just, we'll call them clarifying amendments. Sometimes they're correcting a reference, or sometimes they're just correcting an error, a Scrivener's error in the code. There's a number of those that are being proposed by staff as well. So with that, I'm available for any questions you have.
Yeah, let's go back to the RV proposal. And we had recommended, and I don't remember where it is in here, and I tried to find it and couldn't. We had recommended that they could use that under a limited time, correct?
It's allowed right now for 120 days out of a calendar year. And then for a longer stay, it could qualify as a hardship in those circumstances.
Okay. And then staff's recommending we don't do that?
We continue with that, and we not adopt or consider a provision that would allow an RV for extended stay on a property without a hardship permanently, full-time extended stay, if there's a dwelling on the property. Because there's already provisions for an RV to be occupied on a property in other ways.
Any other members have questions? Okay, Brandon, you have anything further?
Nothing further at this time.
Okay. Anybody have testimony they would like to give tonight? You may, please. Yep, right here. And make sure you give us your name, full name, and address, and for the record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, Aileen Kay. I live in South Marion County at 10095 Parish Gap Road, Southeast Turner, Oregon. And I'm also the AAC Area Agency Advisory Committee number one. So I keep a lookout in our area for everything, and I get notice when there's something, a permit being requested in our area. And then if it's something I think people will be concerned about or interested in, I call them. So anyway, I want to thank you, the members of the Planning Commission, for holding a hearing in the evening. Very good. So, and I just wanted to talk about some ideas for ordinances that should be added, I think, to the Marion County Code. And one relates to the land use hearings that are conducted by the Board of Commissioners. I feel that they should be held at night, not in the day, because too many people can attend, especially farmers. And that's number one. Secondly, they're always on the agenda for 9:30, but whoever writes the agenda doesn't time it right, and it never starts at 9:30. And it wastes time and money. I mean, some people have paid lawyers there with them, and they have to wait and wait, especially if there's a public comment period that people are coming to use. You're there for a long time. Sometimes it's so I just think they should have them at night like you guys are. LUBA and other court decisions. When the legal department here or the planning division staff get the written opinion from the court? If some decision the commissioners make ends up at LUBA or some other court and the decision comes down, I don't know how it's working now, but I have reason to believe that the commissioners aren't getting a copy of that immediately. And the reason I think it's important is because recently, in the past year, there have been cases where a hearing has been held for something in front of the Board of Commissioners through the appeal process. The planning staff has said, no, this is not, we do not feel that this is legal or a good idea. The hearings officer says, no, this is not legal, it's not a good idea. Sometimes a state agency will also add that comment, and sometimes the county attorneys will say that. But the commissioners, they want to do it, and so they do it, and it ends up in court, and it costs everybody money. It causes retired people like me to not have fun because we're working on this, trying to stop something to uphold our land use laws. And so I kind of mentioned this to one of the commissioners recently, and this person seemed to not know that they've been losing cases. Because I think if they knew, maybe they would listen to their staff more and to the hearings officer. And if they decide to go against the staff and the hearings officer, I feel that they should have to put in, not make a decision that day at the hearing. Instead, if they're going to vote the opposite way, they should have to go back and write up exactly why, their reasoning about why they are going against what the staff said and what the hearings officer said. I think in the long run, this will save taxpayer dollars. One other thing that's bugged me for a long time. We live out in a rural area only because we have horses. We belonged to the saddle club, and we were working full-time, and we go, we can't do this anymore, because we'd have to run out there every night and exercise them and ride them. And it was just, we go, we want them on property where we are. So we bought this property. We didn't know anything about water. We thought, of course there's water. Well, there was water, but it was possible that there wouldn't have been water. And I'm just trying to think of some way that the county can help potential buyers of property really look into, on the property they're thinking about buying, is there water there before they buy? Because I've heard so many horror stories about they buy this property and then they say, well, we're calling the well driller. And then they call the well driller and he said, there's no water here. So anyway, those are just things I was thinking of. As long as this process is kind of open right now with modifying ordinances, I couldn't think of any other time to do this. So thank you very much for listening to me.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
And thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome, and thanks for coming and taking the time. Appreciate that. Any question?
No, I just make a comment. I don't think it's a bad idea of having that meeting later on. I think this, out of courtesy to people, that would be a good idea. That's a good recommendation. I do have a comment on the legal procedure when the state passes down mandates to the county. When they pass those laws, isn't there a period? Is that correct?
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, because I thought when they pass legislation, then it goes into a period that there's legal review on it, on that legislation, then it's embedded into the codes.
No, actually, lawyers prepare, state lawyers prepare that legislation, so it's lawful from the get-go.
Yeah.
They just decide when they enact it.
Hypothetically.
I worked at the legislature one time, and yeah, everything that you put before a committee goes to the legal division first.
Oh, before going up to...
Yeah, before anybody even...
Okay. Yeah, they get vetted first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then when it's handed down to the counties, it's mandated, and there's not much you can do about it.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Well, how... they look at the constitutionality of it. They look at, does it conflict with other, other statutes? But they don't, those things don't tell you how you implement something. So when it comes to the county, the county does have some latitude in how they choose.
How they implement it. So that's what you would be referring to with your remarks about the commissioners not knowing, and the hearing officers, is how they implement that legislation into the county.
That's part of it. I think the where she was going with that is, on a land use decision, you can have a decision. It can be appealed to LUBA,
right.
And then there's a decision that comes down from LUBA, and they'll either throw it out and allow it to move forward, or they'll give it back to the county and say there needs to be more done with this, or they'll render a decision basically, you county are insane and this isn't going to happen. So
on this remark in the letter here, that to have the hearing officer or the BOC have a detailed explanation, that explanation should be in that LUBA information on what the issue was and what their decision was then. Is that correct?
I would think so, yes.
Well, I think what the statement is like, because I've certainly experienced it, where the planning staff and the hearings officer make a recommendation.
It's a recommendation.
Sometimes the recommendation is don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The Board of Commissioners, I think they have the authority to go ahead and ignore their staff and ignore right. their hearing officer. They don't have the authority to ignore LUBA or the Court of Appeals.
Right. Okay.
Because if LUBA decides for the county, the opponents still have the opportunity to take it to the Court of Appeals. And Marion County, I mean, no offense, doesn't have a great record at the Court of Appeals. So I think what they're saying is, if it winds up that your staff is correct and your hearings officer is correct, why are we going through this incredibly expensive process without you ever telling the people in Marion County why you decided to ignore your staff and your legal opinion?
So do you with this, do you think it would be a good idea to have a detailed explanation from them on why they did that? I think it would be.
So the...
I don't know if we can tell them they have to do it.
That's not something we can put in code, I don't believe.
No.
So the board is the ultimate decision maker at the county for planning. And when they make a decision, they put their reasoning into an order or an ordinance. It's written there. And whether you agree or disagree, things move from there. So if you disagree, you can appeal. And if you agree, you can implement. So
that explanation is there. It's just you've got to go find it. Yeah,
you have to read. Just okay. Sometimes you have to read the planning because it's not quite a few criteria.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. And they'll usually discuss it verbally at the hearing.
Are you following that?
Yes, but they're still wasting that work.
Can't disagree with that either.
Yeah, they have wonderful staff. The hearings officers change, but they've been pretty good. And to ignore them is just, to me, inexcusable, and it's going to court, and they've been losing consistently in court. And it's a big waste of money and staff time. These staff people, the lawyers here, other people who are on the opposite side, like a lot of times me, so, and Roger, and some state agencies, it's a big waste of time. If they don't like it, if the commissioners don't like the way the law is, they need to lobby the legislature and get the laws changed, in my opinion. I hope that they don't do that, but that's what they should be doing instead of just saying, well, we want to do it this way, and then it goes to court. It's just, it's real frustrating and time-consuming and anxiety-provoking, too. So.
Okay. Brandon?
Just to point out, the board does have a de novo hearing, so their hearing starts over. You can bring in any new evidence there at that hearing or any explanation and address the criteria. It's de novo. It's brand new. So as long as information comes out of the board hearing or things get worked out at a board hearing that hadn't been able to be worked out to that point. So there can be an agreement from an applicant to do some kind of a condition that makes the neighborhood satisfied with that. So it's a de novo hearing, and it's a brand new hearing, just like the hearings officer has a de novo hearing. And so, you know, staff is able to work with what we have submitted by an applicant, but then additional information comes out at every hearing.
Well, I did testify at a hearing where I was told I could not bring anything new into it, that it had to already be on the record, and I could only add my 2 cents as long as it was about one specific thing. So
sometimes hearings are on remand, and then we are limited.
So
and they have to, the testimony has to address the criteria.
I don't believe that was a remanded hearing, though. I mean, I'm not going to swear to it, but I'm pretty sure it was not. Anyway, that was just my experience at that hearing. And I mean, we can't tell them what to do, but I guess we could suggest.
I just want them to think about more the consequences of what they're doing. Yes, they're pleasing that property owner. They're trying to please them. The court negates that, but or has been this past year many times. So I just don't know if they realize what they put everybody through and the amount of money that's spent also.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the board? Roger, did you have anything?
Yours
better,
I mean.
Thanks, Roger.
I made mine.
Yep.
I didn't know you even had 9 people here.
We'll disperse them to the rest of them. Thanks, Roger.
Can you give us a second to read here for a second?
I'm going to go through it all.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm going to read all of that. We're going to be here for a while. Those are more or less exhibits to my letter. For the record, my name is Roger Kay, current president of Friends of Marion County. And I brought some...
Address?
Friends of Marion County, P.O. Box 3274. Salem, Oregon, 97302. We, again, are an independent 501c3 farmland protection organization, and our mission is to protect farm and forest land, parks, and open space in Marion County. I've reviewed Chapter 16 and 17 of Rural Zoning Code and have the following comments. And my first issue is with the notice of quasi-judicial public hearing appearing in Code Page 42, Hearing Notice, Chapter 1644.030. This issue came up in one of the land use hearings before the commissioners, and I think one of the commissioners suggested that we work with staff to perhaps look at revising the subject property's notice. It is, I believe, now 500 foot, is that right? 500 foot?
750.
Now it's 750?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 750. So our proposal is that that be reduced to 250 feet if the property is not within the EFU, SAFT, or TZ zone, and 750 if the property is within the EFU, SAFT, or TZ zone. And often these large parcels have only a few neighbors. In the one case, Jones Agritainment, conditional use on the EFU, had as few as 10 people notified. And when you look at Exhibit 1, there actually weren't 10, but there are 10 notification on the list. That's, let me see, Agritainment Farm Income, that's one. It's basically the bank. And then Marion County Finance and the lawyer. So actually, and farm credit. So actually, there were one, two, three, four, five, maybe six or seven persons or properties that's surrounding this property. And you could see by the map exactly what the picture looks like. And so we think that's too few property owners that are notified of this land use application. And we would like to see that increase to a minimum number of neighbors, perhaps 20. And that can be accomplished by widening the circle of impact and notifying more persons. And or there could be some other appropriate formula the county can adopt to do that. So there could be a more widespread, the impacts might be more widespread and substantial, and would give an opportunity for more people that might be impacted by this change to be part of the decision making, or at least the notification process, giving them the ability to show up at a hearing. The next thing I have is changes to the board procedure. That's page 4. I'm not sure what page 44 is, probably staff's page, but it's represented in chapter 1645-030. And we'd like to see county code changed to provide all parties public comment before final vote on the application. So in the same case, Jones Agritainment that I mentioned, there was a conditions of approval were established with agreement between the staff and the applicant and presented to the board for final discussion and vote. But this was after they'd already made their approval. So persons that were interested in the case didn't have an opportunity to comment on the conditions of approval because commissioners had already made a vote on the application. So the record was closed. The hearing was closed, but the conditions were still worked in afterward by the staff and the applicant and brought again to the commissioners after all of that is closed, and then they voted on that. So it denied the public, the opportunity to look at the conditions. And if I'm sure some of you must understand what conditions of approval are on applications. They can be substantial and actually have major effect on the operation for the conditional use permit. So that's the problem with closing the hearing, closing the record, and still approving conditions that weren't available to the public beforehand. see, what is my next one? Oh, my exhibits. Did I miss that? Oh, yeah, my exhibits number two are the other case, Fennig, which has a map of the same number of feet, I guess, 750 feet, but they include a large number of AR zone property. So what the county did was, I have a three or four page list of people the county were required to notify because of that rule, to notify persons in within 750 feet. So I think that could be reduced substantially if by changing and adopting recommendation A, which would be 250 feet instead of 750 feet, or some other formula that the county might adopt when they're looking at zoned AR that surround an EFU parcel. Because if you look at the people that actually showed up or commented, there were just a handful, so it's probably not worth sending all of that because they're not going to show up anyway and comment about the application. And it's probably unrealistic because they're probably not going to be affected as people would be affected if they were closer to the property in question. Number three, I think item number three, exhibit number three, were the conditions that I mentioned on Jones. Was it Jones Agritainment? Yeah. These are the conditions. There were nine conditions, and these were the conditions that were not made available to the public to review and comment on at the commission hearing. And that's exhibit number three. So I'm going back and forth in here. I've got my exhibits not in correct order. The next item I have is $80,000 income for farm income standard for farm dwellings. This is affects farm dwellings in the EFU and TC zones. And in one case, an applicant sold horses in groups, declared $80,000 for each of the previous 2 years. In this case, the applicant had his CPA testify to the facts of the sales, but did not provide invoices and bank deposit receipts, just a statement by the CPA representing the applicant. So in terms of expensive horses, I'm sure some of you have some experience with horses. They claimed that, I can't remember, maybe seven horses, and these were gypsy cob horses, averaged at $33,000 each. And I looked on the record and on the internet, and I found high-end pedigree gypsy cob horses were maybe valued at $13,000 to $15,000. So they, in my mind, and I testified that they purposely over-evaluated that sale, and there's no record of to whom it was made. There was no record of who purchased those horses. So that is another problem that the county, I guess the county council decided for county staff. The county council was county staff was skeptical of this sale, and the applicant had not provided any lodging, didn't have any horses on the property, and had no adequate lodging for the horses. So, but county council recommended to staff that they accept this transfer of $80,000 to an unknown party without showing the pedigree of these horses. For all we know, these horses were moved back and forth and resold and purchased multiple times because the standard is only $80,000 in two consecutive years. So because of that decision, he was able to qualify for a home on that 80 acres. There is another case, as a matter of fact, that's still pending before the commissioners. This is a Christmas tree application. And in this case, we have the same problem of providing an income standard for farm dwelling, in that there were checks transferred between the grower, supposed grower of $80,000 worth of Christmas trees in 1 year and on the same small parcel the next year.
Roger?
Yeah.
This case is still pending, and tonight's hearing is not an appropriate time to discuss it. There will be a hearing in a few weeks that you'll have an opportunity with the board to discuss that.
Okay, well, this is before the Planning Commission, so it's not really coming.
This testimony and this here will become part of the board's record here as it goes to the next.
Okay.
So
we'll have to skip that for now, sorry.
I think you were saying that you felt the county did a thorough job of investigation.
Yeah.
Okay.
In both of these cases. Let me see here. Okay, so the last item on my agenda is Legislative Amendment 22-003. This is not a land use case, so although they have not made a final decision, they're still preparing the final decision. Am I right? This is not a land use decision.
That's
right?
Correct.
So I can talk about this case. And this is a legislative amendment, and the county is proposing a home occupation as an event. And the proposal is to allow events up to 750 persons with some restrictions in the EFFT or SA zones. This would be anywhere in the county. And we believe that there was insufficient public input to put such a proposal on the docket without wider notification, although it was, let's see, where's the rest of my notes? Although there was some notification, I'm not sure there was sufficient notification to make everyone aware of this proposal and the impact it would have. So this is a legislative amendment. It's not a land use decision in terms of a property. But we don't believe 750 persons with some restrictions is an appropriate use of the zone. And
I'm sorry, guys, I lost that. So this is from the legislature?
This is a county amendment, only within the county.
Oh.
It's called the legislative amendment because it affects countywide properties.
Okay.
It doesn't pertain to a legislative amendment you'd see for a UGB expansion.
I got it.
So that's why it doesn't pertain to a particular applicant. So that was my concern about this case, although it's the county has not written its final decision. It's probably going to be coming up. And again, this is another case where there was substantial opposition from farmers, and there was reference to the Bimart Music Festival, although it's not as severe as that was, because that was localized in south part of Marion County. This one would affect all FT, EFU, or SA zones, so we could see these little parties popping up with 750 people all over the county. You know, what's claimed is they would have events like weddings, gatherings, family gatherings, stuff like that. But it's a home occupation, and that allows for fees charged, and no more than five people are permitted as employees on that. And there's no way you can have five employed persons managing an event for 750 persons. So there are a lot of problems with this, and I think it's inappropriate. It was probably pressure on the commission to do something for some people that were requesting this. So these are things that I think the Planning Commission could direct to the Board of Commissioners, that they could tighten up some of these issues. Notification on home occupations and as a legislative amendment, And the other one would be the farm income test. Sorry it took so much time, but that's all I have.
Any questions for Roger? Can we give it a second? Hang on.
I don't think so. This is pretty...
Thank you, Roger.
Documented.
Yep. So with that, I see nobody else here to testify. Staff, do you have any conclusions?
Nothing further.
So with that, I will close the hearing and remind the members that this is being recorded and that it will be up for review by our members so we can address it at a future board meeting.
Yes.
To do a vote. And we will need to get a email out to everybody for that.
I will. I'll do that. We'll find a date for the meeting and send out the,
okay,
the recording.
Do we have anything coming up on the schedule?
Any subdivisions?
None. No subdivisions.
With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.